You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. It is the 23rd day of July. On the phone line with us to take a look at the marketplace is Jackie Vaik. She's with Stuart Peterson. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Good afternoon, Ted.
Let's start with things that are happening in the marketplace and maybe in the outside area, because some things have happened in the last 24 hours in Argentina. What's going on there?
Well, you know, there's been this ongoing argument with the bondholders who they've been hanging on for the last 13 years now, since 2001, when Argentina defaulted on $100 billion in debt. And so as of today, there's a judge in Manhattan says you have to negotiate 24/7, because otherwise we're going to have the second debt default in 13 years is going to come Argentina again, and the bondholders. You know, Argentina wants them to take even less money than what they promised to give them, and Argentina's calling the bondholders vultures. You know, the impact, of course, is going to hurt the Argentinian people, especially the peso would go to pieces. You know, that's why people have been hoarding U.S. dollars. But the other thing that it could do for us is it could flood those large stocks of grain into the marketplace also. You know, that's the one thing they've been holding on to. You know, they just haven't been selling any grain for fear of what may happen. So this is supposed to be settled by July 30th. It's not looking very good at this stage of the game, but we just have to keep it in the back of our mind. It is a big thing out there looming over us.
And so it's something that could flood the market with corn and soybeans, or just soybeans?
No, corn and soybeans. They're sitting at about, I believe, 20% of their corn and about 60% of their beans yet. And so it would be more negative to beans, I think, than it would be to corn. But it wouldn't help us, no matter how you look at it.
How do you see, speaking of corn and beans, condition in the United States?
Well, I'll tell you what. It is pretty amazing when you look at the 18 major states. For corn, we had 9.3% of the acres below trend, 20.9% at trend, and 61% of the acres above trend. I think that's a record, especially for this time of year. Now, in beans, we have 9% below trend, 33.4% at trend, and 51.3% above trend. And if you remember last week, it was like 62% above trend. Ohio and South Dakota declined back to the trend line, but it still leaves us with almost 85% of the acres at trend line or above. Doesn't bear well for prices, let's put it that way.
Well, you're not building a good case to go higher or even sideways, I don't think.
No, I'm not doing a good job, am I? You know.
If we look out west,
just the facts,
yeah,
you know.
If you look west, they've been dry. Do we find any reason to move higher there?
Well, I think when you look at the general picture, there's a couple things going on there. The driest states that came back this week were, topsoil-wise, were Kentucky, Kansas, Nebraska, North Carolina, Missouri. We all know that they have a certain level of ability in every one of those states and some majors to use irrigation. The one thing I thought that was interesting coming out was the reservoir levels came out, and they said the level in 85% of the U.S. reservoirs right now is only at 26% of capacity. That was as of the 17th of July. Last year was at 42%, and the 10-year average is 30. So, you know, those reservoirs are what provide irrigation water. So, you know, we are already under some issues, although I did talk to some of my guys in Nebraska today, and they were getting a beautiful rain again today. So, you know, that's been a godsend, all the rain that they have actually got on the west. But the highest topsoil moisture states were Illinois, Iowa, North Dakota, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Wisconsin. And so, you know, we can probably endure a little longer without getting some extremely significant rains, but all of us, I think, are saying, we could use a little rain.
Speaking of Nebraska, and I'm wondering what your clientele are telling you, I had a faxed question yesterday afternoon to me from Oscar, who listens, of course, online. He's in Nebraska, wanted to know about the acreage report from USDA, the June 30th report, and why it showed the numbers it did. He is a seed dealer and a farmer both, and suspects that many people had been, based on what he's hearing from truckers and other dealers in that part of the world, I suppose, turning back in seed, both for corn and beans, and seems to think that USDA's numbers might be high. Asked why that might be the case. Now, I ran this number, this question by Daryl Good, and I've got a note into Lance Honig, who is at USDA. And he's the chief of the crops branch out there, and he and I'll talk probably, I think, tomorrow morning or later this afternoon. The answer shortly to the question is that USDA surveys for that particular report, and it's what you have planted and what you still intend to plant at the time that they survey. So that's what they captured. And then as Daryl Good wrote me back, he said, don't forget that as the FSA numbers roll in, that they may change the acreage, although that really won't happen until they see all the numbers, and normally that gets updated in the October crop production number. So the question for you is, when you talk to your clients to the west of us, meaning western Iowa, parts of Nebraska, maybe parts of Minnesota, the Dakotas, do you hear that they did not put nearly as much in the ground as they thought they were going to?
I definitely have heard that comment. I think the thing we have to look at on that USDA report was that they did make it very clear there was still 2.1 million acres of corn to be planted and 11.4 million acres of beans, you know, I think 6.5 million of that was actually double crop beans. We've increased some of that out in Nebraska and in Kansas both. So, you know, we really don't know where we're at from that standpoint. That's one thing that will help with this next USDA survey. You know, they're going to start their field surveys probably on the 24th of this month, and they're going to do objective yields, you know, basically based on ears, pods, and heads. But at the same time, they're going to interview these farm operators to update acreage, you know, and they're going to ask about probable yield, too. So last year, they actually were on the ground, talked 24,000 different operators were actually interviewed, and they won't change the production number on the August report, but they can certainly change the harvested acre number, and that's usually where we get our first hint as to what's going on. But I think when you look at, you got to really dig deep into that acreage report to find the spots where they tell you, yes, we're telling you what the intentions were, but we still had 2 million acres of corn to go. We still had 11 million acres of beans to go. So we're not saying to you, this is a concrete number. We're saying to you, this is what the intentions were.
But I think, as you've told us in the past, once you do the multiplication, you still have a record bumper-sized corn crop.
Well, you certainly can. I mean, I know that a friend of mine came out last week, you know, saying 171 bushels to the acre. Well, you take away 2 million acres of corn. Let's say we didn't plant that corn, and it's mostly in the north. We know that. And adjust your harvested acres to the normal, well, USDA was using 91.5%. You do that, you still get a 14 billion bushel crop. And, you know, people forget that when you remove lower bushels out of the overall national average, it raises the national average. So we're going to pick some of that up just simply because we lose acres in areas that have lower production numbers. And so it's going to be interesting. But, you know, USDA does kind of take a hit a lot of times. And it's just because you've got to really dig into those numbers to be able to see what they're truly saying to you.
Hey, a different set of numbers that I want to dig into that would be related to the United States, the RFS, advanced biofuels, and Brazil, Mato Grosso, ethanol production there, because those can come in, those gallons can come as advanced fuel, and we might see that happen again, I suppose, in the not-so-distant future if the RFS isn't changed very much, which most people are thinking about. But their cost of production remains fairly high down there compared to what their price for corn might be, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Remember, we talked a little bit last week about this, you know, that the farmers down there, especially out of Mato Grosso, were going to the government and begging for them to basically raise the subsidy so that they don't lose money. The corn price since April has dropped from $4.13 U.S. down to $2.05 a bushel U.S. as of this week. And, you know, their cost of production is $3 to $3.50 U.S. And so the government subsidy is only guaranteed in at $2.80. And, you know, this makes them really subject to some pretty hard times. Estimates are saying that basically about maybe 25 to 28% of that new crop is sold. So, you know, they haven't planned very well, let's put it that way. But on the flip side, and when you start to talk about the RFS, that lower corn price is a good thing for any new corn ethanol plants, which we know they've been building down there. And they have actually retrofitted some of the sugarcane plants so that they can actually use corn when the sugarcane isn't available. So, you know, if you look at the impact on imports, or on exports for us, you know, we didn't, basically in 2013, we didn't import anything from Brazil, indirectly or directly, for the first time in 21 years. Okay, so they've become a little more, we've become more stable, and we haven't had to do that. at the very same time, you know, the growth in our ethanol, or the expectation a lot of guys have to see this corn price go higher, is thinking we're going to have an absolute drive up again in the, you know, in the ethanol demand. If it does happen, it certainly doesn't appear to be coming out of Brazil. And so this could possibly impact, you know, the Brazilian corn acres too for 14-15. There's no doubt. You're going to plant acres. If you know you're going to lose money right out the gate, probably not. But at the very same time, they are sitting on way too much old crop yet too. And so it's a double-edged sword. Not a good thing, you know. And if you look here in the U.S., you want to make a comparison. What are our guys doing? You know, today there was a Reuters story out there, I think Dave and I talked about this morning, but they're buying up these poly bags, and they're going to bag corn, is yep. what they're going to do. So, just a really interesting situation we're building into here if we do end up with a big crop.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thanks, Todd.
Jackie Vex, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. She's from right here in Champaign County. Joins us to take a look at the agricultural futures markets and the commodities each and every Wednesday afternoon. You can hear her again on our website. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. Speaking of those poly bags, I know Dave Dickey will talk about those in his newscast. And that one's coming up next.